those things where, like, yeah, moving in is always a process, and it becomes a lot worse when early on in that moving process, you lose AC.
Is it back now, at least?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no. Oh, it's okay. Taken care of. I'm good. I'm back where it's supposed to be. Yeah, I mean, no, things are fine. Just, sorry, man. It's also Monday, and so my brain is, like, partially functional.
Yeah. Are you sick?
No. We had our first football game last Friday.
Okay. All right.
And so, yeah, my voice is almost back from that.
So I was like, it's Monday, the like kind of hoarse voice. All I could picture was the meme of like all the flames. And it's like, no, it's fine. It's fine.
Oh, yeah.
I'm fine.
That's how our first football game felt. Because we were playing one of the best teams in state, and it was clear that they were and we weren't.
Okay.
42-0 at the end of the first quarter.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah, fortunately, it slowed down after that. We only lost 60-something to 7.
Well, that's good. So at least they didn't like leave their starters in to just like continue to trample.
Yeah, no. They changed things up, fortunately. Okay,
that's good. That's good. Holy crap. Oh, I'm familiar with that, though, because my high school, maybe not. Well, I don't know. We probably got beat like that a couple of times.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, like, this is not. I'm really hopeful this is not going to be like our new normal for this season. Cause I like some of the guys on the team, and I can't really handle watching them be, like beaten down and despondent all the time.
Yeah. It's really hard to keep like school spirit up because you just got whooped, you know, like it's hard. So
definitely.
All right. Let's hit an intro. We'll jump into it.
Welcome to the podcast, Blue Collar Scholars. Not long ago, a group of brilliant minds met together at a pub to discuss their unfinished works. They recognized the value of coming together around delicious beverages and having meaningful conversations. That group was known as the Inklings. The Inkle Dude podcast here, we're working to be the second iteration of that group. So pour yourself a craft beverage, pull up a chair, and join the conversation.
Have you had anything good, at least, to drink? Maybe to balance it out a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've had a couple of good things to drink. Nothing too exciting, really. Another example of, you know, beer is just better off the tap. Recently, this weekend, with Kilt Lifter and an 805 off the tap, both of which I've had fairly recently in bottles, and you know, they're good, solid beers. And off of a tap, it's like, that feels nice. That there's something just special about that. Although it also, I don't know, I'm always kind of torn how much of it is actually better, and I know that's part of it, and how much of it is I'm in a place and drinking, and like atmosphere is a factor.
Plays a huge role. Yeah. You taste with your eyes way before you do with your mouth, you know, like,
yeah,
if you're in a good state, everything tastes better, man. Like it's just, it's real. It's very, very real.
Yeah. And so that, you know, I mean, it was good, but again, nothing spectacular or exotic lately.
Yeah. Good old steady. Yeah. I actually, cause I ran out, and so I went to go looking for some stuff. And my cheapskate just got the better of me because, like, I was thinking, I was like, oh, you know what? Like, I really need to get back to, like, maybe some lower calorie stuff. And there for a while, that was super popular and you could find it regularly. But I was at Albertsons and there was, like, hardly anything. There was the only thing that looked remotely close was going to be, like, the Modelo Oro or something like that.
Okay.
And it was like $20 for 12. And I was like, sorry.
For Modelo?
I can't do it. Yeah, for their like lights beer.
Yeah,
whatever,
no.
Low-cal.
And that's what I'm saying is like, you know, it's one thing if it's like a premium beer, you know, and they're charging that. But
yeah, I couldn't get behind it. So I went without and drank my Zevia soda instead. So yeah, it's doesn't hit quite the same. I will be honest there. It's not even a Dr. Pepper, you know, like you can't even be like it scratches the itch, but just barely. So
yeah, it feels like you're having something good in your mouth because it's bubbly.
Yep. If you can believe the lie long enough just to get through the meal, it's nice. But
there you go.
If you think about it too much, it's not. It's not there. But. But yeah. So on, continuing on from last week, actually a little bit. It's kind of a strange path where the conversation's connected, but. So last week,
which is a bit of a specialty for us.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That it happens so infrequently. but I'd been in that conversation about baptism. Right. But then also like simultaneously. So there was, the Crunch, right? The podcast, The Crunch.
Yeah.
And they have been on this big Catholic Protestant thing. For some reason they decided they're like, hey, we need some attention, so let's stir that pot because it's easy attention to grab. That's not my assessment on their efforts or anything, but it totally is.
I was gonna say, yeah, it sounded totally unbiased and neutral. Yeah,
it's like you could just see it, you'd be like, oh no, I've not heard any of these things before. It was very, but anyway, some of it was funny, some of it was done originally, but for the most part, their interaction skyrocketed with it, but. There was some crossover, so it was like Ghostbusters crossing the streams with these conversations, right? Like I had this baptism conversation over here and then this Crunch Protestant Catholic conversation over here, and they just like melted in the middle and destroyed the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. and so there was the baptism conversation, and on the Crunch podcast, they were talking about the... Immaculate Conception.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I chimed in. I was like, oh, I'll like say it, try to be, I don't know, engaged or do something on social media. And so there was a comment I asked for clarification because they were saying, oh, well, the Immaculate Conception. I was like, well, which one are you talking about? Right? Like, are you talking about Jesus? Because like if you have a problem with that one, like that's foundational. Right, like that's one we got, like everybody agrees on that one.
And then, yeah, it's really hard to call yourself Christian and disagree with the idea that Jesus was conceived without sin.
Right, right. And so that, and then through a couple of back and forths, he was cordial, which was nice. It was a pleasant change. It was about the Immaculate Conception of Mary.
Right.
And so this is one, and again, bear with me. Let's start with that piece, and then I'll hopefully, if we can, we'll get to the how it connected to baptism in my brain. But the Immaculate Conception of Mary is one that I've struggled with because I often think sometimes that we have tried to take Jewish tradition and mirror it. And so, like, sometimes we take some of our New Testament stuff and we're like, see, it fits perfectly to this Old Testament and it's perfectly aligned. And so like the womb of Mary being the Holy of Holies of the Jewish temple was like, has always been kind of a stretch for me. Right. Cause like I not because it's bad or that I think it's wrong. I'm like, I don't think it's necessary.
Well, I mean, sure. I would agree with you in the idea that like the parallel between Mary and the Holy of Holies in the ancient temple in Jerusalem, that parallel isn't strictly necessary or even one that is like specifically made scripturally. Oh, really? I mean, like scripturally.
Scripturally, yeah.
Like, no, that parallel definitely is. But that's, you know, and fairly early on, like that's one of the things that the church fathers talked about and everything, like out in the desert. But biblically, there is the reference to, you know, the new Adam and the new Eve. And just as Adam and Eve began free of sin. And so, therefore, like, if we're going to carry that parallel, we would need both Mary and Jesus free of sin as the new Adam and new Eve for their starting point.
Right. And so this is where, so that's the point where I get to where I start to cross over into the baptism conversation.
Okay.
Right. And so like I put this in the notes because I wanted to kind of like get it stirring in your brain a little bit.
Oh, yeah. And it has been.
And so with the transubstantiation, right, it's this is my understanding of it. So there's the form and the substance, right? And is it, so you're already got that look on your face.
Well, so basically, like, here's the thing. Like, okay. Philosophy is a pain in the butt.
Yes.
Linguistically.
Right.
Because in philosophy, we take all of these different terms that in conversation are basically interchangeable, and we make it so that's no longer the case. And so like form and substance are from like kind of two parallel terminologies.
So are they different though?
They're definitely different, but they're not like opposites. You know, like in Plato, you would have had form and matter as these two things. And then in Aquinas, you've got substance and accident.
And then isn't it like Kant or something like that that does...
Kant does a lot of things.
Because he does a similar like... form and
so there are a lot of variations on Platonic or Aristotelian thought.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of things that kind of come in.
Okay.
But form and substance in general are somewhat similar in the most basic of terms in that they are the thing that's like really at the heart of the matter, at the heart of whatever's there. Whereas like matter and accidents are those things that are apparent about them, those things that you can kind of see and are particular to this one.
So form and substance are the same word?
No.
Same group?
I mean...
Because like I'm thinking, so like let's take it into Eucharistic
language,
right? So there is the wafer, right? It doesn't change into actual flesh, right? Because like I bit it and it was still
right. Exactly.
But there's a spiritual reality that changes. And so that's where I've said the form is like the wafer, right? And it's substance, it's nature, it's higher spiritual level.
Okay. So then what you're talking about there, like more specifically, I guess would be we would normally call that the matter, the stuff that's there.
Okay.
That remains the same. And so, yeah, the substance and the stuff.
I can use matter. I can try to.
Yeah.
I'll probably screw up a couple of times.
That's okay.
But I'll use matter.
That's okay. Like literally me and,
matter and substance.
You know,
okay.
3% of the American population will understand where you've gone wrong.
Crap, where am I?
So the difference in terms of, I made the comparison between Jesus and Mary and Adam and Eve.
Yes.
And the necessity of sinlessness.
Okay, and so using transubstantiation as like my framework, I said like in that it's not necessary because the what if, I'll put it in a rhetorical state question, that the matter isn't what is sinful, but it's the substance that is. And so when Jesus is conceived and married, the physical flesh isn't what, it's not like the chromosomes don't pass on sin into Jesus, right? It's the nature, it's the substance that is the sinful nature. So like transubstantiation makes sense to me there because the body of Jesus wouldn't necessarily be carrying forth the sin. It would be the nature, the human nature that went from am I tracking?
Right, but where's that? I'm tracking, but I'm still asking the question. So where is that human nature coming from? Because if that's not being received from his mother, then I'm not sure where it is. And whether it's the nature or the physical body that's being inherited from the mother, either way.
But could it be changed like it is in the Eucharist?
Well, except for the fact that like in the Eucharist, what we've got here is a complete change. Like it's not a consubstantiation where like the substance of the bread remains bread, but now there's this like Jesus crammed into the bread.
Right.
Or into the wafer. And so, like, with that analogy, the substance, that nature that was handed on would also have to have been, like, replaced. And I don't know where that replacement is coming from. So in transubstantiation with the Eucharist, we have by the power of and working of the Holy Spirit, we have Jesus Christ taking on the appearance of bread and wine. That doesn't mean Jesus is bread or that Jesus is wine, but that this matter of the wafer and this matter of the wine possess within it Jesus Christ.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. No, I see what you mean. So, but wouldn't...
Do you? Because I, like, confused myself as I was saying it.
The line that got me is the where is the... If it's... Where's the human nature coming from? That piece has got to be accounted for. And... Mm-hmm. But I feel like that also tracks back, right? So, like, Mary, even if she's immaculately conceived, she would still have to mm-hmm. receive a human nature from her parents to some degree, right? And so, like, then it goes, so then her immaculate conception again seems like an unnecessary, because, like, that would have to go, you know, then, like, everybody in Mary's line was immaculate, like,
right? No, which is definitely not the case. Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. So here's the thing. This is going to get way more confusing.
Awesome.
Well, because, I mean, so, like, even Mary's Immaculate Conception, it wasn't, the idea of Mary being conceived immaculately wasn't based in any way on the holiness of her parents. Joachim and Anne are still considered saints. Like, they're mm-hmm. viewed as being holy people, you know, which makes sense. But it wasn't through them or their goodness that Mary was preserved from original sin. This is why, like, so the Immaculate Conception is treated as, like, a miraculous thing. It is actually through the blood of Christ on the cross that she is washed free of original, is preserved from original sin. I've got to clarify that, because it's not that she was washed of it, but, like, preserved from it through the cross. Remembering that the crucifixion, no, that's a totally natural facial reaction.
Okay.
The crucifixion is an event that happened in time somewhere around 33 AD.
Right.
But it's also the historical event, the work of God himself, which is beyond time. Right. Like, everyone in the Old Testament who is saved, even those ones like Elisha who are brought into heaven in the flaming chariot, all of them are brought into heaven through the saving power of Christ.
Right, right.
Even though they were taken up at that time, millennia before Christ, who is nevertheless still the firstborn of the dead.
Okay, yep, I'm good there.
Right, and so, like,
okay,
all of that is just sort of the framework for the idea that, like, it is actually that eternal timelessness of the wedding feast of the Lamb celebrated in heaven and on Calvary at that specific moment,
okay,
by which Mary, her human nature is purified prior to her conception. So,
but couldn't that have happened similarly just for Christ? Okay. I think I understand what you're saying now. It's not the same type of Immaculate Conception. We're just saying that in the timelessness, or looking at the timeline, whoa, holy cow. I had something, then it broke down.
Let's just, let's take a minute to settle in the fact that St. Augustine is the one who said, time is a thing of which I know until I'm asked to explain. Yeah. Like, okay, let's just settle and enjoy the fact that, okay, if Augustine didn't figure this out perfectly, it's okay for us to be confused too.
Agreed.
But to your question,
so it's that she's preserved, not that she was immaculately conceived as Christ was. So, like, Those, I feel like those, we should have different words.
Well, so
it seems very confusing because like you would think,
as I'm sitting here taking the Catholic Church's side in a lot of things, because well, duh, yeah, I am.
Yeah.
But like the church in general doesn't refer to the conception of Christ as the Immaculate Conception because it's kind of an unnecessary thing to specify.
What do they call it?
When Mary, if Mary through the Immaculate Conception is already pure, and then the Holy Spirit is the other part of it, then yeah, duh. Where would sin be immaculate? Here?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's important too, like, because your question is 100% fair. I don't know that I could say, strictly speaking, that the Immaculate Conception of Mary is a necessary thing. I'm not saying it's necessary, that like God couldn't have simply, Jesus couldn't have just been sort of planted in the womb of Mary immaculate.
Right.
And then by the presence of that goodness in her womb have sanctified it and made it the Holy of Holies in the same way that the temple was made out of stones. Yes, good, fine stones, but not stones that were sacred until
God was
the Ark of the Covenant was housed in.
Right.
And so like the idea of necessity, I think you're totally right to question. My counter is not that it is necessary, but that it seems to be what happened when we're told about the idea of a new Adam and a new Eve.
Where's the
necessity?
Sorry, I'm interrupting. I apologize.
St. Paul.
Paul does?
No worries. Yeah, St. Paul, when he refers to Christ as the new Adam, he doesn't mention Mary specifically by name. I was going to say, I don't
remember an Eve.
Oh, you know what? I might need to look back at that.
That's
I
fair.
Might be misremembering.
That's fair.
I might be crossing it with a church fathers again, talking about St. Paul.
Yeah.
But if anything, here is where the one spot where I would say that the Immaculate Conception of Mary is necessary is not for the sake of Christ being free of sin, but for the sake of Mary being able to say yes freely when Gabriel approaches her. Because one of the effects of sin is that weakening of our relationship, and not just our relationship with God, but also that relationship
right.
between intellect and will.
Right.
And for Mary to be able to freely and fully say yes to Gabriel, who greeted her as being full of grace, by the way, which is the other thing that we often point to, seems to suggest that there was nothing hindering her from being truly free to cooperate with God in the fullest human sense. So, not that she was like divine because of this, but that her humanity was not an obstacle to her yes.
Right. Sorry, my video is like giving me a hard time today. I'm just going to go old school. No,
no worries, man.
Okay. But what about Joseph? Like, he said yes too, right? So, like, and I'm going to say, like, this kind of questions, like, pulls us back into the Old Testament stuff too, to where, like, you know, I think of the judge, you know, like Gideon, right? Where these people kind of go all in. I'm not anti-Mary, right? So, like, I've had a joke forever that I've always wanted to use, but it's not fitting in yet. But like, so I'm not just going to waste it on a forced opportunity, but like, it's not one of those things to where it's like, no, Mary. But keep going.
Again, I hear what you're saying, but what Joseph said yes to was a very human thing. Taking someone to be his wife. What Gideon said yes to is a very heroic, but very heroic in a human way thing of leading soldiers into battle, even if outnumbered vastly. Mary is not just saying, like, I will do this ordinary thing that is difficult. But like understanding what's being asked of her even like would require a level of clarity that these other ones just kind of don't.
Clarity or submission? Because I feel like
I would argue that I would argue
because I was going to say like if there was like a requirement that she had to fully understand not air quote some fully sure. but yeah, fully yeah. understand the impact of what God was asking her to do and then said yes to that, that's a big deal, right? But if it was like, hey, you don't know everything, I'm asking you to submit to God because this is an angel in front of you, right? That is still heroic to the same level, but does it require...
More so, in fact.
Well, I mean, just the... Yeah, well, I mean, like the same thing, like, again, using Gideon as the angel of the Lord is before him and saying, hey, you're going to do this. And he's like, I don't know how that's going to happen, but I submit, right? He's like... So his clarity is less, but his submission is high.
But he knew what, but what he was clear on was what was being asked of him.
Fair.
And that's what I'm saying is like, if, and we know Mary doesn't have like full understanding of all of the steps because like, what's her first response?
Right.
How can this be? And the angel's response isn't, let me lay out the steps for you. It's just, look, the Holy Spirit's going to take care of it. And then Mary's response is, let it be done unto me according to your word. And so what I mean by clarity isn't clarity in terms of like all of the details of the steps, but like a recognition of what the ask actually is. Like God becoming man, not God appearing in front of you like he did when he chatted with Abraham about the possibility of wiping Sodom and Gomorrah out. And Abraham's negotiating with him about how many good people he needs to find right. to not do it. But like actually God becoming man. And again, like not that this makes any evidence for the idea of it being strictly necessary that Mary is immaculately conceived. But Gabriel's greeting to her of full of grace. In order to be full of grace, what are you? Because this one, I can definitely say this is definitely biblical.
You referenced that twice as like it's got a big meaning behind it, and I don't know what that big meaning is. Like,
well, so if we, so grace being that like free, unmerited gift of God's love that's offered, we are not full of grace. Right? Like we receive grace, but hopefully we're pushing more and more of the crap out of the way so that more grace can come in. But we've still got a lot of crap in the way. Mary, on the other hand, is greeted as being full of grace by an angel. Like by someone without sin is recognizing her specifically as being particularly and uniquely full of God's love.
Okay.
And God's love and sin cannot, like...
Right. And again, I'm sorry for continuing to be this devil's advocate. And I feel like I'm being antagonistic, and I don't mean to be. Thunder. Sorry.
A nice, clean break from antagonism there. Just childlike wonder and awe.
But at the same time, like, I think of David being after a man after God's own heart. Right, who was clearly not free of sin.
And not referred to as full of grace.
But I mean, like, but we're attributing a like, what is being after God's own heart? I mean, like, that would be, like, if I were to use that in my human context, it would be like, that's a man after my own heart. That would be somebody who is similar to me in their everything.
A man after God's own heart, to me, that implies a pursuit. Like the things that David is chasing down are the things of God. He chases after them like a like a newborn puppy that goes chasing one stick and brings back 35 different ones. Okay. But like,
I mean, that's,
but like
that's
he is, he chases down the enemies of God. He seeks to build up the kingdom of God's people. Like he's doing a lot of things that are godly, but even so, like he's also chastised by the prophet Nathan on a not super frequent basis, but I don't think it shocked the palace servants after a certain point when Nathan came in and David had to go around in sackcloth again.
Right. You know? Hmm. Okay. Well, this conversation didn't go as planned. Good. But
no,
that,
fair enough.
But, like, I was hoping that my case for the, like, transubstantiation stuff was a little stronger so that I could bridge it into the baptism.
Well, so,
I still want to do the baptism conversation, so maybe we can do next week, we can do, take the transubstantiation parallel to baptism. Maybe that,
sure.
Maybe that will actually be stronger.
Because I will say, I do think, you know, kind of one of the things that you posted on the show notes that I thought was really cool is the idea of Jesus as the OG transubstantiation, which I think that's 100% still legitimate in spite of, you know, I feel like we've chased down so much of like Mary's Immaculate Conception that we're losing sight of the fact that like Jesus, by all outward appearances, just a dude. A good dude, but a dude who is actually at his core, at his substance, this divine being. He is God himself in that. There is still the substance, which literally just means that which stands under. So like at the core of who Jesus is, what makes him who he is not really fully captured in his physical body and what he shows out. And so I think there's a lot there.
So then maybe we do, like, we'll wrap it up here. But maybe we can do another, because I'm also kind of interested in this idea of the matter and substance as it pertains to the human person, right? So like in our flesh, because like we've always thought that like because a mom and a dad got together, that physical act is what created sinful nature. Right. Like that's our Puritan, probably more specific Puritan tradition to where like the act of sex is what was the passing on of sinful nature. And so it was applied to our physical bodies. And then I was so like I want to maybe hammer that out a little bit more, too, is like maybe it's in the substance, not in the matter, or maybe it's both. And I don't know. But.
Well, so. Okay, so for the sake of this episode coming to an end, my kind of life lesson on this is that like all of this confusion happens because we so often try to put body and soul as these two separate things. You know, some people like really like to elevate the body, and say that, you know, whatever's happening in this life, that's all there is. So go for it and enjoy it. And then there are other people who are like, oh, the body is this prison for my soul. When in reality, humans are God's, we're the original hybrids, like spirit and body. In order to be a complete human person, I need both. And they are both to be in harmony with one another, which we experience, God willing, when we get to heaven. Because my life on this earth is a spirit and body that are constantly battling with each other. Because I am not capable of regulating either one of them correctly.
I like that. And I'm going to say ditto. just like,
I love
you're
a ditto.
Right, though. Like, I don't want to lose sight that we're wrestling with the nuance and some things that are difficult and language is going to be a barrier. But I still think that it's, even if... like you don't come to a full conclusion or full knowledge of, like it's still worth the wrestle, you know, because it's
100%
worst case scenario. You come out a little bit richer from having had the conversation, you know? So like it's a big one. And I think that, you know, Mary's a big topic. So it would be nice to work through some of the questions and concepts so that there is not so much, you know, 140 character hate out there, you know, like talk about it. Like she's a big deal. Yeah. She's important. And everybody agrees with that. It's the level of nuance. And I think you hit it on the head. The body and soul is so hard for us to separate that it really screws up our conversation, our language. And so the conversations end up flying by each other and not ever actually connecting. So I think that's a really big insight. And then I think if you're also having trouble connecting body and soul, you probably need a cup of coffee to bridge that gap. And that is provided by us. We would love to do that for you. So hop on the inkledew.com website, order a couple bags, roast it fresh, ship it to you. And we can hopefully help you in your meaningful conversations by caffeinating you a little bit. So got anything else there, man?
Oh, sure. Tons of things. But nah, for now, yeah. I'm good.
That's fair. That's fair. All right. With that, we will say
adieu.